and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Developers are releasing a new stadium proposal in a Hail Mary attempt to keep the Bears in the city.
A lot of costs and no real value.
They're the middlemen of the healthcare system, but what do pharmacy benefit managers do? And are they saving your money or wasting it? Chicago has no confirmed measles cases yet. An infectious disease doctor on what you should know to prepare.
And there's no more iconic Chicago St. Patrick's Day tradition than dyeing the Chicago River green.
And happy St. Patrick's Day, Chicago. We explain the history of the river's annual emerald dye job. And now to some of today's top stories. With the return of spring in Chicago also comes the return of construction season. Once again, it means fewer lanes for drivers who take the Kennedy.
So definitely tomorrow morning rush hour inbound, you're not going to have the reversibles available to you because they'll be in the outbound direction. So you're going to be down from 6 lanes to 4 lanes.
Starting tonight, crews will begin shutting down the left 2 lanes of the outbound Kennedy so construction crews can stage their work zone. By the end of the week, the entire 2-mile outbound stretch should be entirely closed. Then in mid-July, work will shift to the right 2 lanes, with the entire project expected to be complete by Thanksgiving. So this means drivers who need to take the exits or head to O'Hare, you should stay in the local lanes. Reversibles will be directed outbound until the job is done. Toni Preckwinkle is announcing she's running for another term as Cook County Board President. The announcement was first reported in Politico's Illinois Playbook newsletter. In a campaign email, Preckwinkle says she's proud of having balanced budgets without adding new taxes. She says she wants to build on efforts to her current tenure, like criminal justice reform, expanding health care access, and relieving medical debt. Preckwinkle has held the office since 2010. The election will be held next year. And if you're flying in or out of Chicago this summer, be ready for the crowds. The Chicago Department of Aviation says this summer is set to be the busiest in the history of O'Hare and Midway airports. Airlines are scheduling nearly 18 million departing seats between June and August, up 7% over last year. The biggest carriers, United, American, and Southwest, have all announced some combination of an increase in seats, departures, or destinations from the two airports. Philanthropist and matriarch of one of Chicago's most powerful families, Cindy Pritzker, has died. Cindy was married to Hyatt Hotel's founder, Jay Pritzker, and was the aunt of Governor J.B. Pritzker. She was appointed to the Chicago Public Library Board in the 1980s, soon becoming the board's president, and led the effort to build the Harold Washington Library. Cindy and her husband also co-founded the prestigious Pritzker Architecture Prize. In a statement, Governor Pritzker says, quote, "Cindy shaped the city of Chicago just as much as it shaped her. She will live on in the many institutions she strengthened, the causes she championed, and the more vibrant Chicago she helped build." Cindy Pritzker was 101 years old. Up next, developers revealed their proposal for a new stadium at the former Michael Reese Hospital site, but will the Bears bite?
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
One more Hail Mary attempt to keep the Chicago Bears in the city and to ditch their suburban plans. Farpoint Development Group has released renderings of a new lakefront stadium located at the former Michael Reese Hospital site in Bronzeville in an effort to convince the Bears to stay in the city of Chicago. The team purchased the former Arlington Park racetrack in Arlington Heights 2 years ago for $197 million, but plans have yet to kick off. Also in the mix, a new plan or a plan to build a new lakefront stadium just south of Soldier Field, but that plan has stalled in Springfield over the proposed cost to taxpayers. Joining us now is Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of sports business consulting firm Sports Corp. Mark, welcome back. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brandis.
So what were your thoughts on this most recent proposal from Farpoint?
Well, I had seen much of it before. And so I wasn't surprised at what they laid out. The one piece I was quite surprised at was that the Farpoint said that they have not had discussions with the Bears. That actually is a very telling statement. That means the Bears have not really had great level of interest in that site. And that is, I think, what results in the term the Hail Mary pass that they're trying to throw by putting this out there for the public and for the politicians to see and react to.
That's right. Well, because it's been reported today that, of course, these plans had been in the works for some time, but Farpoint had been keeping them close to the vest, obviously probably hoping to have that meeting. But now they're taking their shot before they lose it. So it's something of a last ditch. Could this work?
Well, could it work? Sure, but a lot of things have got to fall into place, none of which appear to have happened so far. One of the most important things that would need to have happened is for some political leadership, particularly within Springfield, to have stepped up and said, hey, this now makes sense. Let's see if this is the best way to keep the Bears within the city of Chicago. That hasn't happened. You've had Cam Buckner making some comments that it's a good idea. He represents the district. But other than that, you haven't seen the politicians who control the purse strings say that this is something that should be looked at very carefully. And that's really what was needed, either the Bears or the political leadership, or both, needed to step up and say, this is a good idea, let's take a look at it. And so far, we've heard crickets.
Well, and as you've mentioned, State Representative Cam Buckner, whose district includes that site location, he's come out in support of it. We haven't heard much from anyone else. But this proposal supposedly comes with a price tag of about $600 million for taxpayers compared to something billion. That number is still, I've seen several different numbers estimated for the lakefront proposal. Would not that price tag difference make this more palatable to lawmakers?
You'd think that it would. Don't forget that the price tag for the area south of Soldier Field also included paying off the bonds that the city has refinanced at least once, if not more often, since they were first issued for the renovations at Soldier Field, and includes a lot of infrastructure improvements and parks and things like that. But the real key point here is if the Bears are interested in this site. If they're not interested in it, then Springfield's not going to be interested in it. And if they're not interested in it, City Hall's not going to be interested in it. And that's really who we need to hear from. And if we don't hear from them, I think that's an answer as well.
And Bears president and CEO Kevin Warren, he's previously said that the Michael Reese site is too narrow for the team's ambitions. What do you think their main focus is or should be in figuring out their next location?
Well, they've made it clear that their preferred site is the south of Soldier Field location. They had a big press conference. They had the mayor on board that a lot of people show up for this big announcement. And unfortunately, among the people who weren't there were some important people from Springfield. And those people said this is not something they want to pursue. That plan was not what they want to pursue. Haven't heard that there's been a lot of progress since then on that site, but we have heard that there's been a lot of progress in Arlington Heights since then. Finally, the Arlington Heights taxing authorities, political leadership got together and said, look, this is a once in a multi-generation opportunity. And so we better not blow it just because we're trying to, you know, feed at the trough, which is a time-honored Illinois tradition, of course. But just because we're all trying to feed at the trough here, let's see if we can work as partners. And that's what they seem to have found a way to do with the Bears, work together as partners rather than one trying to take advantage of the other. And since then, looks like they've made a lot of progress.
And of course, there's going to be benefits and challenges to moving to Arlington Heights. What are some of those for the Bears?
Well, the first challenge, of course, is changing, is any kind of change in location creates a logistical change. So people have to change their mindset as to where they're going to go and watch the games, or where they're used to coming downtown. But they're also used to it being very difficult to get to Soldier Field. It's a beautiful picture postcard shot. It's the old Goodyear blimp visual is just fantastic. But that only goes so far. The reality is that Arlington Heights is an exceptional site. It is the Bears season ticket holders. If anybody did a heat map of the region, it's actually a pretty good location For bear season ticket holders, it's easy to get to, highway access, rail access, and that's really important because you've got to have people being able to get to and leave the building pretty quickly. Not just for Bears games, but for all the other events that they'd like to that the Bears would like to have take place in the new stadium. It also has a lot of land. The land so that they can do other activities and events in and outside of the stadium, the tailgating, of course, but also enough land so that there can be development rights that can be granted or sold off to help defray some of the costs associated with building and operating the new stadium.
Okay, so obviously we're still watching this one. We're going to have to leave it there for now. I'm sure we'll talk about this again in the future. Mark Gannis, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Up next, the governor's plan to protect pharmacies and lower drug prices. Governor J.B. Pritzker is calling it one of the great ironies of the modern age. Breakthroughs in life-changing, even life-saving medicines that are so expensive, they're out of reach. Our Amanda Venicky joins us now with a plan the governor says will lower prescription costs. Amanda.
Yeah, Brenda, so we're going to get to the governor's pitch for saving consumers on drug prices in just a bit. But first, I want to talk about an explanation of something that at first blush seems really basic, and that's getting a prescription filled. Your doctor writes the script, you get it filled at a pharmacy, but the pharmacy isn't in full control. There's a go-between. They're called pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs.
So they are the Webster's Dictionary definition of a middleman. So the PBM sits between the insurance company and the pharmacy, and they determine what reimbursement is, how it gets reimbursed, prescriptions get reimbursed, and most importantly and most frustratingly is what patients pay and what they can and cannot get when they go to the pharmacy.
You heard that right. What patients can and cannot get from a pharmacy. That's Chad Kodiak, who owns CodoCare in Joliet. He says PBM practices have nearly driven him out of business. He shares one example of working with a parent to secure an attention deficit disorder medicine for their child. He'd order the medicine from a wholesaler, but the PBM didn't reimburse him the whole amount. Kodiak says it's one of many instances in which he had to tell the patient, our pharmacy can't afford to fill your prescription anymore.
The PBM has cut the reimbursement for those kinds of medications and others so severely and so deeply that every time we were filling the prescription, we were losing $50.
Plus, he says that the PBM also refused to pay the pharmacy dispensing fee. That's a fee that they otherwise generally get that's supposed to cover things like labor, the pill bottle, the label and such.
Amanda, why not?
Well, Kodiak called that the billion-dollar question. It is one that he and really nobody besides PBMs can answer.
Because not only is there no regulation for these PBMs, they are completely protected by all kinds of secrecy. So we have no idea. There's no transparency. There's no way to know.
And critics have their suspicions, though. The major PBMs own pharmacies themselves, and the thought is that these PBMs are paying their own pharmacies higher reimbursements than independent ones. That is one of the ways that Illinois lawmakers are considering stepping in, by banning PBMs from steering consumers to pharmacies where they have a financial interest. Then there's also a suggestion that Illinois can take control where it has it, with prescriptions covered through state-run Medicaid. Also, by dealing with the transparency issue, by forcing PBMs to open their books to the state insurance department.
And what do PBMs say about all this?
Well, so they reject that they should be blamed for increased drug costs. Instead, they say, look to Big Pharma for that. Now, they, however, did not respond right away to my specific questions. But when the governor made PBMs a focus of his budget address last month, the association representing PBMs issued a statement saying, to be clear, the core mission of PBMs is to lower prescription drug costs and increase access to medications, the statement says. The Senate sponsor of the measure to further regulate them, though, says instead he's seeing patients who can't afford medicine they need to be healthy.
pharmacy benefit managers probably started out with good intentions, and that is to be able to lower the price by negotiating discounts with the manufacturers and then passing those on to, you know, the plan sponsor or to the consumers. That just hasn't happened.
The legislation still in negotiations. Illinois somewhat limited by what it can do. Pharmacies say really they want federal action. But the pharmacist that I spoke with a lot, Chad Kodiak, says that if something doesn't happen, he is serious about joining the 80 or so other independent pharmacies that last year closed in Illinois. He said he's taken out a line of credit, has exhausted much of his personal savings, and that's where things are at.
I'm sure a very tough spot for those pharmacists. Amanda, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you can read Amanda's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Measles outbreak has mostly been concentrated in Texas and New Mexico, but it has snaked its way throughout the country. There are just over 300 known cases and 2 measles-related deaths in the U.S. Chicago and Illinois currently have 0 confirmed cases so far this year, but public health professionals say it's just a matter of time before the virus is here as well. Joining us to discuss more is Dr. Anuruddha Hazra, the Infectious Disease Fellowship Program Director at the University of Chicago and practicing physician at Howard Brown Health. Doctor, thank you for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So the measles were previously eradicated in the United States in 2000, and we have maintained that status for over 2 decades, but now we're experiencing this outbreak. How did we get here?
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct. The measles is a highly contagious virus, one of the most contagious pathogens there are around it. We were able to successfully eradicate due to advancements in public health and very effective vaccines. But over the past several years, we've been noticing declines in our vaccination rates, specifically against measles, which then makes us susceptible to allow, you know, new infections to enter our system because of the herd immunity not being there anymore.
Who's most affected?
Yeah, so generally measles impacts young children and infants the most. That's where we see the highest amounts of morbidity and even deaths related to measles or measles outcomes.
Remind us, if you would, sort of explain what the measles is.
Yeah.
and what are how the virus presents. What are some of the symptoms?
Yeah, so measles is a respiratory viral infection. It's an airborne virus that typically presents with upper respiratory symptoms to begin with. So typically cough, sore throat, and known for its pathognomonic sort of skin lesions itself. It can lead to severe pneumonia, and that is typically the most common cause of morbidity and death, but also has a lot of post-viral syndromes, specifically related to encephalitis and issues with central nervous system. So not just an issue that happens in the acute phase of the infection, but also severe side effects later on.
So as we said, no confirmed cases this year in Chicago. The measles vaccination rate sits at 92.2%. Do people in Chicago and Illinois need to be worried?
I would say yes. So while we've seen the highest preponderance of cases in Texas for the most part, you know, just this past weekend, there was 2 cases that were identified in Michigan. So it is creeping its way into the Midwest. And the magic number to really think about herd immunity is 95%. Like you need a 95% sort of vaccination rate to really have that wall to keep yourself protected, and particularly those most vulnerable protected. And while we are close, we are under that number. And so I would not be surprised if Illinois joins the number of cases that we've been seeing across the country.
Any reason or any thoughts about why those vaccination rates have fallen?
Yeah, I think there's longer-term issues and shorter-term issues. I think in general, when we think about vaccines, I think vaccines tend to be a victim of their own success. When people don't see folks succumb to diseases that could be preventable, they sometimes forget about how severe these diseases once were. And I think that has related to why we've seen declines in measles vaccination, not just recently, but really over the past decade or two, which then allows us to have these outbreaks, but none to the degree that we've seen currently so far.
Now, there was a measles outbreak in Chicago last year, 67 individuals, mostly at the migrant shelter in Pilsen, becoming infected. How was the city able to contain that?
Yeah, so we saw those infections coming largely through migrants from the Darien Gap, and we know that measles is endemic in other parts of the world, and likely these were imported cases. And again, you think of migrant shelters, a very close context, and a lot of those folks were never vaccinated or did not receive the ability to get vaccinated. The city stepped up and created massive vaccines. vaccine clinics and these shelters and made sure that, you know, those most vulnerable were able to get vaccinated, that outbreak stopped. And that's the only way to extinguish an outbreak, is to bring that vaccination back up to protective levels.
Of course, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. recently assumed the role of the nation's health secretary. What do you think his confirmation says about the state of public health and what it means for the work that you and your colleagues do?
Yeah, I think it's really troubling to see that the head of HHS is somewhat of a vaccine critic. You know, for those of his supporters, I always say he did write an editorial this past month saying that the MMR vaccine is the number one way to prevent measles as is. So even he is coming around to understanding that vaccines are the only way out of this current outbreak.
What would you tell someone who might be hesitant or nervous to vaccinate themselves or their children, or just kind of forgetting about it, you know? Like, well, you know, we eradicated the measles, right? So there's no need to get the vaccine.
Yeah, I always tell folks, what questions do you need answered in order for you to feel comfortable to vaccinate yourself or your loved ones? This is a preventable illness, you know, there's no reason the year 2025 any individual in the United States should succumb from this illness itself. And so I tell my patients, what questions do you need answered, and making sure you're going to reliable places that don't have some other agenda or something else trying to sell you about this. In the end, these vaccines have been around since the 1960s, highly safe, incredibly effective, and again, our only way to extinguish this current outbreak.
It also sounds a little bit, I don't know how much it might harken back for you to, you know, the debate over getting the COVID-19 vaccine over the last five years as well.
Yeah, and that's more of the shorter term issues, I think, around vaccines. I think people feel this kind of almost like vaccine fatigue around things. But I will say people were, you know, jumping over each other trying to get the COVID vaccine early on. And you think about that because people remember their loved ones dying and whatnot of COVID. And it was shortly after, when all of that memory sort of sortly faded away, that vaccine uptake sort of lagged. And I think we're sort of in this same situation right now. And as the young kids say, like, F around and find out. That's what's going to happen if we continue to see vaccine rates decline. And it's unfortunately the only way that we can potentially see higher rates of vaccination, particularly in those most hesitant.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to have to leave it there, but I think we've covered it all. Dr. Anuruddha Hazra, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're right back right after this. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Chicago, but we know most of you probably didn't wait until today to start celebrating. Activities kicked off over the weekend with parades across the city and, of course, the Chicago River being dyed green. Ever wonder how Chicago's beloved dye job tradition got started? Here's Eunice Alpasan in our WTTW News Explain series.
Ah, St. Patrick's Day in Chicago. While for some the holiday may mean green beer and lots of partying, one thing's for certain, Chicago's estimated 200,000 residents of Irish heritage take their traditions seriously. And there's no more iconic Chicago St. Patrick's Day tradition than dyeing the Chicago River green. The history of the Green River flows back to the local plumbers union. They've been sponsoring the dye job for more than 60 years. The story goes, as the plumbers tell it, that business manager Stephen Bailey got the idea from seeing a plumber in stained green coveralls. See, the city was working to enforce restrictions on waste going into the river during construction projects, and so plumbers were using dye to help trace the flow of wastewater and detect leaks. Bailey and his pal, Mayor Richard J. Daley, initially considered dyeing Lake Michigan before ultimately picking a portion of the more manageably sized Chicago River. And so, in 1962, the river got its first festive dye job. Bailey waxed poetic, telling reporters the dye would connect the city to Ireland, flowing from the Chicago to the Illinois River, onto the Mississippi, up the Gulf Stream, and across the Atlantic into the Irish Sea. The city has tried a few dye distribution methods over the years, but today a couple of motorboats do the job, turning a roughly quarter-mile stretch of the river downtown just the right shade, using what organizers say is an orange vegetable-based powder that turns green on contact with the water. The exact dye recipe has always been a closely guarded secret. Some local environmental groups have pushed back against the tradition, like Friends of the Chicago River, who feel it harkens back to a bygone era when the river was treated as a quasi-sewer rather than a living body home to fish and wildlife. But regardless of one's stance, there's no denying the tradition's influence. Other U.S. cities have taken the idea, dyeing their own rivers and canals each March. And with thousands gathering along the Chicago River every year to see it all unfold, the tradition doesn't seem ready to die anytime soon.
And you can see more from our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains, on our website at WTTW.com/explains. And that's our show for this Monday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. A judge orders Chicago to speed up efforts to make crosswalks accessible to blind pedestrians. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and more. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.